Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This morning, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, eliminating the constitutional right to an abortion. It was a 6-3 decision. Justice Alito wrote the majority opinion, which was joined by Justice Thomas, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. Justice Roberts voted with the majority to uphold the Mississippi law, but said in a separate opinion that he would not have overturned Roe. Clarence Thomas, writing a separate opinion, says the Supreme Court should now, quote, reconsider its decisions that found a right to contraception, same-sex relationships, and same-sex marriage, and, quote, correct the error it made in those cases. Justices Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor filed a joint dissent writing, quote, today's decision strips women of agency over what even the majority agrees is a contested and contestable moral issue. It forces her to carry out the state's will. It takes away her liberty. With sorrow for this court, but more for the many millions of American women who have today lost a fundamental constitutional protection, we dissent, end quote. Just minutes after the Supreme Court decision came down, Missouri's Attorney General Eric Schmidt signed the country's first full abortion ban with no exceptions for rape or incest. According to KCUR, the trigger law in Missouri makes it a Class B felony to induce an abortion, with prison sentences from 5 to 15 years. Abortion providers could also have their medical licenses suspended or revoked, and South Dakota just followed suit. Another 24 states are certain or likely to follow suit, according to the Guttmacher Institute, including Arkansas, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and Wyoming. If you would like to join us to talk about how you are responding to this decision, we would love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Jody Jacobson, a longtime writer, reporter, and editor focusing on reproductive justice. Hi, Jody. Thank you so much for joining us on this very dark day in this country.
Thank you, Rose, for having me, and thank you for all that you do.
Well, thank you, Jody. I just was thinking that we've had you on the show for years talking about this issue. Given how long you've been writing about this, what are your overall thoughts? A lot of people are saying we saw this coming, but it is still so incredibly painful.
Yes. I mean, I think we knew this was coming. You know, I personally, and I'm not saying I'm some sort of, you know, crystal ball in a human being's body, but I personally knew this was coming for 25 years because they were telling us in very clear ways in legislation and in the actions that they took domestically and internationally that this was their agenda, this was their strategy, and they were going to do everything they could to make this happen. And, you know, I think there are two things we have to hold constant. One, this is about an anti-democratic fascist GOP, not just around abortion rights, but around all of our rights. And that is critically clear, and we have to accept that. But it is also about democratic appeasement and lack of proactive strategy, lack of proactive action, lack of ability to hold our own Democrats accountable for doing what they needed to do over years, not just yesterday or, you know, what Congress we have right now, but we had chances in several points in the last 25 years to codify Roe, to codify contraceptive rights, to codify other things that we did not do because it was more convenient to raise money off the fear of those things. And because we have a national advocacy coalition that is more affiliated with protecting Democrats than protecting rights. And so I think, if nothing else, I hope that this is a moment we all sit back and really, really allow ourselves to examine our own assumptions and ask ourselves, are we really concerned about abortion rights or LGBTQ rights or other rights? Or are we more interested in being our own version of the GOP and protecting our own at any cost? I think that is a really key question.
So we'll talk about the politics in a minute, but to talk about how this affects people right now. In Missouri, abortion is now illegal. There's a full abortion ban in Missouri. South Dakota just followed suit. And I'm sure maybe over the course of the hour, other states will follow suit. So what we have right now, Jody, is about 24 states will either ban or greatly limit abortion across this country.
Yes. Yes. And people in all of those states are going to be either needing to rely on abortion funds, to which I encourage everyone to give money, or hopefully we'll be able to access abortion pills by mail in some form or other, although that may in fact be trickier in some states than others. But we are heading into a place where many countries have deliberately moved away from, which is higher rates of unsafe abortion, because people will seek to have an abortion no matter what the law is. That's just reality. We know that from evidence from throughout the world. And abortion has been with us since people have been with us. And so we will see higher rates of maternal mortality, higher rates of maternal morbidity, higher rates of criminalization of people who seek abortion care, higher rates of doctors and providers, clinicians, clinic staff being targeted, even if they're not providing abortions, because the point will be, and the point has been, to stigmatize anyone affiliated in any way with reproductive health care. So if you want to look at anything for comparison, you can look at countries that we normally talk about in very unflattering terms, like Afghanistan, where, you know, healthcare workers are targeted because they're healthcare workers. That's what's happening in the United States.
Well, to your point, looking at Missouri and so many other states, it is now a felony to induce an abortion with prison sentences from 5 to 15 years. And then I'll just read from some other states, and this is from the Guttmacher Institute. Arkansas, a trigger law is expected to take effect within days. Performing an abortion or attempting to perform one could lead to 10 years in prison or a fine of up to $100,000. Let's see, we've got, well, Missouri's already on the table. North Dakota's going to go into effect soon. Here is Oklahoma, making abortions illegal, punishable by up to 10 years in prison or $100,000 fine. What are you hearing from providers at this point, Jody? Because so much is on the line here.
Yes, providers are, and rightly so, upset. It would be a ridiculous understatement. Let's just position this clearly. They have been living with harassment, with attacks, with threats for years now. Providers have been living with those things for years. We talk about right now members of Congress getting death threats. Providers have gotten death threats no matter where they live, for years on end. Mm-hmm. Some have been assassinated, as we all know. So this will only increase because people who are even suspected of providing abortion care will be targeted. So I think, one, clearly clinics in many states are going to go out of business because they will not be able to openly and legally provide abortion care. Two, there will be I suggest that there may be, an exit of doctors from states that are passing these laws because they're not the last kind of laws that are going to be passed. And three, no matter where you live, people who are suspected of, let's say someone has a miscarriage, that miscarriage may well be determined to have been an attempt to be an abortion, and therefore that person can be arrested. And I'm not saying this as conjecture because it has happened already in many states, even under Roe, where certain authorities have decided that a miscarriage can be used to burnish someone's career by prosecuting it for abortion care, for abortion. So we're really in a very dark place. And the only way out of that dark place is to have a long-term, no apology strategy to go forward and overturn this. And that starts with this administration and the Senate Democrats taking up a strong campaign to expand the court. That is the first and most important thing that they have to do. And the administration also could undertake some executive orders, but I've seen no indication that we are at that place.
And to talk about, and I really hope the media focus on this in the coming days, because I feel like they have not done an adequate job of talking about who will be affected the most. Often you hear just a throwaway line that it's people of color and poor people. Okay, fine, but let's dig a little deeper here. USA Today has a piece about how half of the states are concentrated in the South, Midwest, and the Plains. More than half of the nation's Black population lives in the South, where Latinas make up a significant proportion. The Plains states have a very large indigenous population that hardly gets mentioned. Oklahoma passed a 6-week ban similar to the one adopted by Texas last year. So Jody, this deserves so much more attention to really dive deep and talk about who's going to be affected here.
Absolutely. There's no question. And, you know, just to say a couple things. One, I personally have experience with this because my mother almost died from an unsafe abortion pre-Roe. Wow. And I was extremely young at that time, but I knew there was something going on. There was something wrong. And so my personal experience and my later own very safe, dignified abortion and my ability to have two children safely, even despite a very difficult pregnancy, is all due to access to reproductive health care that millions of women in this country have never had. And those are mostly Black women and absolutely Latino women and others. So we have in this country always had disparities, and those disparities have ended up in Black women having truly horrific rates of maternal mortality and morbidity, horrific rates of inability to access abortion care or contraception, or even now, think about this, you know, formula shortages. Every aspect of reproduction in this country is more difficult for people of low income and in vulnerable populations than any one of us probably can imagine, because it's a daily struggle to both have or not have a child, and also then to support that child. I mean, we just, by the skin of our teeth, expanded the school lunch program. That was just about to expire. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is that as we talk about abortion care, we have to think about it in the broader context of the fact that vulnerable communities are struggling every single day. It's with abortion care and not just with abortion care. And if we really wanted to, you know, provide and support people who want to have a child, and I want to underscore that there are people who legitimately do not want to have a child, no matter how many supports you give them, and they have that right. But if we really wanted to support those folks, we'd be doing a lot of things very differently. So yes, this is going to fall. It already is falling, not going to fall. It does fall on the poorest, most vulnerable, most discriminated against people in this country. And unfortunately, it's the same around the world.
I've also been thinking about how this is going to affect teenagers in these states. How do you expect a teenager who cannot talk to her parents to get on an airplane or drive for a couple days and spend the night? I mean, you can't even imagine that. Jane's Due Process is this incredible organization, as you know, in Texas. And they help teens with a judicial bypass. So in some cases, these young people have to get permission from a judge that allows a girl under the age of 18 to have an abortion without parental involvement. Right after the decision came down, Jody, Jane's Due Process said, you know, we are so angry and sad, but we are pausing all services and support because of the uncertainty of the current state of the laws in Texas. So teens right now have absolutely no help in Texas, Missouri, South Dakota, and many more states to come.
I am really concerned about teens for that reason. Although on the other hand, I imagine that many teens are going to be getting information through social media, I hope they will, about how they might safely find an abortion fund or support for medication abortion. But yes, we are putting young people in increasingly difficult situations. Again, not just with abortion care, but with abortion care and reproductive health care. And this is partly due, you know, not only to the GOP, but the so-called moderates in the Democratic Party and moderate white people who look at things like parental consent laws and think, oh, that makes sense. It doesn't make sense because for one thing, the data all show that these parental consent laws, again, most deeply and most horrifically affect teens who are already living in situations of violence, who may or may not have been raped by someone in their family, who are not going to get permission from either an absent or dysfunctional parent, and who are discriminated against both in terms of gender and age by judges and courts. So these parental consent laws are a product of this existing puritanical streak in our country that even many so-called moderates think they make sense, but they do not make sense. If I say to myself, oh, this makes sense because I want my daughter or my son to come to me and talk to me, well, Allah is not going to make that happen. My son or daughter will come to me because I've raised them that way, where they know they can come to me without judgment. If you haven't raised your kids that way, law is not going to make that happen. And what you're doing is you're consigning many people to dangerous outcomes.
Well, it's also important, Jody. I grew up in a loving household and there's no way I could have talked to my mom about this.
Right.
Well, there's that
there
too.
Go, right.
Right. Yeah. There's so many aspects to this. I just saw a tweet from Slate's Mark Joseph Stern who says, please do not forget about incarcerated folks who will now be compelled to carry unwanted pregnancies behind bars. They may be denied proper care, shackled while giving birth, and forced to stand by as the state takes away their baby and returns them to the cell. This is so important because women are the fastest growing segment of the incarcerated population, increasing at nearly double the rate of men since 1985, according to the ACLU.
Yes. Again, I just want to underscore that this happens, you know, this has been happening before today. There was a case recently where in California, where a woman was forced to give birth in really horrible conditions under incarceration. And then the baby was taken right away from her in California. So, I mean, these things happen under our radar, and we think about them mostly when the laws come about that, you know, sort of like turn a spotlight on the rest of us. But we have to understand that in this country, we have a very deep-seated need to control people at some level. And even the most, like, you know, public advocates of abortion rights do not necessarily take on these issues. So I am just wanting to raise up the many people who work on decarceration, on the rights of the incarcerated, of the people who are living in incarceration and are abused every day by the systems there, and particularly people who are forced to give birth under incarceration. And, you know, there's another undercurrent here that I think we have to raise, which is that when those babies are taken away, they are either put in really ineffective and really horrible, or I should say potentially horrible, foster care conditions, or they are adopted out to Christian white families who see it as their salvation strategy to take babies from poor people. So this is a much more dark thing going on than we are even aware of.
And we just got some news that Planned Parenthood in Little Rock, Arkansas, confirmed all scheduled abortions have been canceled. And we have been following this for the last couple weeks, where clinics are actually opening early to get as many people as they can in, just in case the decision came down, because some clinics said there's no possible way we can stay open after this decision comes down, because we could spend time in jail. So this is just one of many clinics across the country that have canceled all abortions in light of the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. Today, we're joined by Jody Jacobson, a longtime writer, reporter, and editor focusing on reproductive justice. Again, abortion is now illegal in Missouri and in South Dakota, and probably other clinics across the country have canceled all appointments. Another 24 states are certain or likely to follow suit. If you'd like to join us, what are your thoughts right now? How are you responding to this decision? If you remember what life was like before Roe v. Wade and you want to share a story, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And let's hear from Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy. Thank you for holding.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, as soon as I called to get on, my hands started uncontrollably shaking. I don't know what that's about. But anyway, I want to second all the things that you've been talking about. As far as the incarcerated people, I really recommend that people read the Bay View as often as they can, because it always covers issues about people in prisons, including this issue. But what I was originally going to call to talk about was these people who supposedly love the pre-born child so much don't seem to care about what happens, you know, what this pre-born child is going to be born into, which is either being unwanted or into a conflicted situation, you know, not really loved and chosen and wanted. They could be born, and that can be for so many reasons. You know, they always say, oh, well, the foster child, the foster system, the adoption system, you know, that all has consequences. People aren't, you know, it's always a conflicted feeling being adopted. You know, I'm not saying that adoptions don't work out. They do. But there's always an undercurrent of sadness, you know, of being initially rejected or sent away. I don't know. I just don't know where to begin with this. I'd also like to ask one question.
Sure.
If you have an organization that you can recommend, you know, I know you've covered this a lot, so I'm going to donate to that, I forget what it's called, but that one in California that's going to help people travel. But
right.
Is there some place to donate in the South? I used to live in Louisiana. I'd like to help my people.
Well, thank you so much, Judy. Jody, do you have recommendations first?
Yes, I strongly recommend that you donate to the National Abortion Funds. The National Network of Abortion Funds will help distribute funding that you give to their funds, to abortion funds in states that are working to help people go to states where they can still get abortion care. And the need for that kind of funding is going to be tremendously greater now. Mm-hmm. Also, I highly recommend that you look up and get familiar with Plan C. You can find it on the web, planc.org, which is abortion pills by mail. And I believe that all of us that have any kind of means should be helping people who may need abortion care and not be able to access it, get access to abortion pills by mail, either by buying it for those people or putting into a fund that can help those people get access. So those are two suggestions that I have immediately.
Well, thank you for those suggestions. To take Judy's other comments about the hypocrisy of these, you know, so-called pro-life justices overturning Roe, but never supporting policies that actually help children and families. Sue writes, I am furious, but not surprised. I think the statement from the Southern Poverty Law Center is key to the hypocrisy of the so-called pro-life movement that veils the desire of men to control women, Mississippi, where the Dobbs case originated, has the highest child poverty rate among all the states and one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the country. The failure of Mississippi legislators to expand postpartum Medicaid coverage for new moms is reprehensible, while Mississippi legislators have sought to restrict abortion access. Jody, the same thing could be said for so many of these states that are about to ban abortion.
Yes. Look, I think we have to recognize a few things. One thing is that in other countries where fascism is obviously present, the first things to go are the rights of people to their bodies, to reproductive health care, to sexual health care, the rights of LGBTQ persons, and healthcare itself, care for human bodies. And that's because humans are expendable in a fascist society, and especially in a corporate fascist society. So I think we have to locate all of this in what is really happening. And we saw this during, you know, the pandemic. We still see it, but we saw this very clearly during the pandemic, that the assumption was, okay, some people will die, but we got to get businesses open, or we're not going to get, you know, vaccines out to all of these states. Or in fact, in my state, like in just not in my state, but in DeSantis's case in Florida, just absolutely, you know, banning childhood vaccines. I mean, this would seem like craziness if not for the fact that it is a dedicated strategy. People cannot fight back if they are too hungry, too poor, too ill, and have no means of survival. They're basically focused on their survival. And the more you can criminalize them, the more you can throw them in jail for whatever, that lends itself to aggregating power in certain places. We are seeing this in this country. It's been a long time trend, but I think, and I've been thinking about this a lot this past week, whether we have an inbred form of denialism that we just can't shake because we see it everywhere and we're not recognizing or proactively addressing the signs. So yes, I think these strategies, denial of Medicare, you know, Medicaid, denial of vaccination, denial of food, all of these things are in fact part of a strategy and we have to see them that way.
Alicia writes, what disturbs me most is the hypocrisy of anti-abortionists who only seem to care about these mothers and fetuses until they are born, when they consistently oppose the most basic supports to raise these children. Today, we are talking about the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. Abortion is now illegal in Missouri and South Dakota. 24 states are certain or likely to follow suit, according to the Guttmacher Institute. We're joined by Jody Jacobson, a longtime writer, reporter, and editor focusing on reproductive justice. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, and we will continue to do a number of shows about what this means and about how we got here and where we go and the money behind this decades-long campaign to overturn Roe v. Wade. We're joined today by Jody Jacobson, longtime writer, reporter, and editor focusing on reproductive justice. I wanted to get to the second part of Sue's comment. Oh, and Judy, thank you again for calling in. It's just so difficult. You said your hands were shaking, and we just want to acknowledge that, and thank you for calling. I wanted to go to Sue's second part of her question. She says, if centrist, aka neoliberal Democrats with power, like Nancy Pelosi, had backbone or principles, they would have fought the long-term efforts by Republicans to take away our rights for years before this moment. Instead, they saw this coming for decades, they will be in a weaker defensive mode. To combat and overturn this decision, not only will we the people need to band together and fight, we need to stop voting for any Democrat and support more progressives with a fighting spirit and integrity. I mean, Jody, we're going to have a whole hour, maybe more, about this. But what are your initial thoughts about this? I mean, last time we talked, had you on, we talked about how President Obama said he was going to codify Roe when he was running and then changed his tune when he became president.
Yes. I mean, my only answer to that person's comment is yes, I agree. I mean, we have to be not only voting in people who say the right things, but holding them accountable while they are in office for either doing or not doing the right things. That is something where we fall down. And we make so many excuses for Democrats that do nothing. I find it, again, a form of denial, because we are facing so many existential crises right now, and we are not only not making progress on them, we are falling further and further behind. And we all know that there is going to be backlash to any kind of progress. So if we are not bold, if we are not as progressive in the truest sense of the world as possible, if we are not willing to fight for the greatest, the greatest degree of change, then we will not only not just be running in place, we will fall further and further behind on these existential crises. So I can't agree more with what they said. And this is, you know, what I fight for every day, every level, whether it's your county council person, your mayor. Do not accept mediocrity. Do not accept it. It's not okay. Our lives depend on having truly progressive, accountable people in office.
The governors of California, Oregon, and Washington issued a joint statement saying that they will protect access to abortion and contraceptives and to defend patients and doctors from abortion bans in other states. Let's go to a few more callers. Let's hear from Kate in San Francisco. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much. And thanks for hosting a discussion on this topic. It's really needed. I'd like to just offer a little bit of pushback on the notes that were made about adoption at large. I really brushed against the suggestion from Jody that families only adopt is a way to kind of exercise guilt, or especially, you know, adoption clustering and like Christian families who are toxic, essentially. That's not true. Adoption is available as a family creation mechanism for all types of people, including my family. So just wanted to offer that, as well as caller Judy, who noted that these children are unwanted and loved. I'm an adoptee. A lot of reframing has been done around adoption language, and we don't refer to adoptees as being given up or abandoned or unloved anymore. They're placed for adoption intentionally. That's it. Again, thank you so much for your conversation on this topic.
Thank you so much, Kate, for bringing up those points. I don't want to speak for Jody or Judy, but tensions are so high right now, and I'm so sure that that is not what they meant. Jody, do you want to quickly reply?
Yes. First of all, I want to apologize profusely for not speaking carefully enough to make clear that that's not at all what I was saying at all. What I am saying is that when you're looking at people who support, let's say, simultaneously stripping people of their bodily autonomy and rights to contraception, abortion, decision-making, fertility assistance, anything and everything, that you, and then they also at the same time promote incarceration, promote forced birth in prisons, promote forced adoption, that those things together are extremely troubling. Not adoption per se. I would never say that. And I want to again apologize profusely for not speaking carefully enough to make that clear. But there is a long literature about forced adoption and what has happened in this country around that kind of practice. I would recommend, for example, reading the books and articles by Catherine Joyce about the strategies of the very far Christian right around these issues. So it's not about adoption per se, which I think is obviously a gift of love, but rather about forced pregnancy and forced adoption.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Kate. And we'll definitely do shows on these issues in the near future. Let's go next to Dorothy in San Francisco. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am old enough to remember the bad old days before Roe. I was living in Dayton, Ohio at the time I'm talking about here. And at the time, in Ohio, abortion was illegal. It did not stop people from having abortions. They just happened to be more dead women, because if they're desperate enough and a woman is pregnant, doesn't want to be, and she's desperate enough, she will use any means she can to try to end the pregnancy and up to the risk of her own life. At the time, also, I was involved in a group called Dayton Women's Liberation. This was like 1970-ish. And they set up, you know, the women in this organization set up an underground railroad where they would take women who wanted to have an abortion to states where it was legal. And this was, I was not involved in that directly, but I knew people who were. And this was quite a, it was a very well-organized program. And again, it's the Underground Railroad, so it was all done very discreetly. But I wanted to throw that out as a possibility. Again, this, you know, under these circumstances, I think we're going to be seeing more of that kind of activity. I certainly hope so. And that at some point, you know, the body politic will come to its senses.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And thanks for letting us know about that group, Dorothy. It reminded me of the Janes, who did similar work in Chicago. There's actually a documentary out on HBO. We're going to do a show about that soon. To her point, Jody, we've had so many medical advances since the 70s, and now medication abortion accounts for more than half of all abortions. I mean, it's so important to say that this is a safe, very safe procedure. Taking these pills is very safe. So half of abortions are medication abortions. I mean, what's so horrific about these laws is that if someone finds out they're pregnant, say at the 4-week mark, and then they have to travel, so many states are backed up. It's already happening, and they have to wait maybe another month, which makes it more complicated. So how do you see this playing out? Because, you know, people we've had on past shows say we're not going back to the days of wire hangers because of pills and medical advancements. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, again, I think the question becomes one of access, information, and fear. Right. On one hand, we have much greater access to information through the internet, through, you know, access to the internet on our phones and the web. We also have tremendous disinformation. So, for example, the far right is actively spreading disinformation that abortion pills are dangerous, which is kind of funny if you want to think about it that way, given that they're putting people in really dangerous situations of both, you know, problem pregnancies and unsafe abortions. But okay. So, you know, we do have greater information. We have much less access to clinics. So to answer the two things in that question, there are already, you know, discussions underway about underground access. It won't be a solution, but it will be an option for some people. But of course, it's not something you can really discuss a lot in public because you don't want to make it a target. The other thing is that with the expansion of access to medication abortion and the safety of medication abortion, which is very, very safe and can be self-administered. And again, I highly recommend that people look up plancypills.org, that people can access abortion care, again, through funding abortion funds who will get people to states where abortion care is available, and funding and helping people access abortion pills, and really formulating right now a no prisoners kind of take no prisoners effort to restore our rights. We have to be focused on restoring our rights in every sense of the word, starting today with calling your senator, California, and telling them to support expansion of the Supreme Court right now, because our two senators in California are not on the Judiciary Act bill. Sorry, my allergies are acting up and it's affecting my throat.
No problem. You know, Jody, I just went to plancpills.org and I just typed in Missouri, and the pills are not cheap. They're about $100 or
They're
more. And in some cases, it takes 6 days for delivery. So do you know, are there, I'm sure, I mean, like you said, these organizations are just working night and day to get the word out, but to try to educate people that you might want to have some pills, you know, in your bathroom and order them in advance, because, you know, if you need this right away, people cannot wait up to 2 weeks for this.
Right. So that's absolutely true. Although the pills are effective for that, you know, you can take them at that stage of pregnancy. So they are going to be effective, but here's the more to your point, there is a great deal of effort and discussion underway right now about having physicians in the United States, in states where abortion is legal, able to prescribe abortion pills and get them to people much more quickly. So there's a lot going on right now to overcome that barrier. The cost issue is unquestionably an issue. But again, abortion care itself can be well over $300 or thousands of dollars if you have, you know, a life-threatening pregnancy. So what we need to think about is how can people of means in any communities stock up? Can you create like a group of people who are concerned and put some money into stocking up on abortion pills and making sure they're available for people in your neighborhood or in your community? How can you give into a fund that will help people pay for abortion pills? There are ways around this until we can make those pills cheaper. And that also is an effort that's underway and has to do with, you know, the screwed up nature of the pharmaceutical industry and all sorts of other things. So all of those things are being worked on right now. But for the time being, those of us with means can help those of us without get access to care.
Jody Jacobson is a longtime writer, reporter, and editor focusing on reproductive justice. And we are talking today about the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. It was a 5-4 decision. Alito wrote the majority. The three liberals dissented, saying today's decision strips women of agency over what even the majority agrees is a contested and contestable moral issue. In so many surveys, 70-75% of the population say they support Roe v. Wade. Let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Mary in San Francisco. Hi, Mary. Thank you for holding.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. And many years ago, I had an abortion in San Francisco. It was legal. It was in the early, mid-1980s, excuse me, and it was just legal, but it was one of my better medical experiences. I got an artist for a surgeon. They referred to him as the surgeon with the velvet hands. It was a suction abortion. It was a masterpiece. I was back at work the same week. No complication. I'm calling about emergency powers and the way that 2 years ago with a public health pandemic, COVID, Governor Abbott and other anti-choice legislators that were given emergency powers used them to shut down Planned Parenthood type abortion contraceptive clinics with the pretext that they were a public health danger. And if you think this can't happen, it happened here in San Francisco on March 17th in a liberal West California city where our mayor, London Breed, shut down every single other kind of medical choice dispensary. She, on that particular day, very quickly, every cannabis dispensary and delivery service, even medical dispensaries, were shut down. And this was a death sentence for some of us. Later on that day, the Board of Supervisors, progressives, other people, public outcry, the dispensaries were back open, and yes, they are essential businesses.
Well, thank you for calling in with that, Mary. Thank you for calling. We just wanted to bring you some more breaking news. We mentioned that clinics are no longer taking patients. We've got NPR's Sarah McCammon saying she's hearing from clinics in Louisiana, Kentucky, Texas, and Missouri. They're halting abortions immediately. Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin immediately halted all scheduled abortions at its clinics in Madison and Milwaukee. Jody, I mean, just thinking about someone who had an appointment and it's canceled. What do you do? Someone else, Helene Olin with the Washington Post, said, we have to remember we do not have federal paid time off in this country. So it's not like you can take 2 days to go deal with this, especially if you're one of the 37 million people making less than $15 an hour in this country.
Absolutely. I mean, everything that we have said and talked about over the years is happening right in front of our eyes, right? The most vulnerable people who do not have the means are being immediately affected. And it's, you know, I think sometimes we get so used to using those kinds of facts and arguments in our regular work and reporting that we forget that it's real. This is real. This is happening right now in front of our eyes. People are being forced. This is forced gestation, is exactly what it is. One thing that could be done right now, if the president were to decide to do it, is he could declare by executive order, I understand, that every federal qualified health clinic is to provide abortion care, and send federal marshals to every federal qualified health clinic to make sure that they are safe in providing abortion care. That would override the state laws in federally qualified health clinics. But I don't see action from the administration on that. So
what explains that, Jody?
I mean, I think you don't want to hear what I have to say, but I just feel like the Democratic leadership is so far out of touch and so pathetically incompetent in so many ways that this is our payback for not holding them accountable. People said, oh, you know, Joe Biden will be the right person to fix the country. He's not. He's not campaigning on expanding the court. He hasn't been pressing for the Senate to keep voting and outing all of these Republicans against all of these, you know, different things that they are doing. He actually, as soon as yesterday or as recently as yesterday, was talking about bipartisanship. You cannot have bipartisanship with fascists. These people are fascists. And, you know, I know a lot of people are going to say, oh my God, she's so extreme, but look at the evidence. This is what fascism looks like. You know, DeSantis in Florida has declared himself the only person who can certify an election in Florida. I mean, if we do not win the governorships in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and in several other states, given the nature of the far-right legislatures in those states, we are apt to see the elections in those states be completely falsified, no matter what happens. This is a very dangerous moment. And this administration is not up to the task. It's just simply not up to the task. Neither is Nancy Pelosi, neither is Chuck Schumer, neither are any of the so-called, you know, moderate Democratic leaders. They just are not.
What about the large pro-choice groups? Because, okay, we know that gerrymandering is an issue. Obviously, the Electoral College is an issue. But what have the Democrats done since Gore v. Bush in 2000? I mean, 5 of the 6 Supreme Court conservative justices were appointed by presidents who lost the popular vote. And yet, this is where we are. Minority rules.
Yes. Well, okay, so here's the good news. In many of the states in which gerrymandering has been a problem, there have been maps redrawn that are more fair. They're not completely fair, but they're more fair. And some of those are really critical states like Wisconsin, like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, et cetera. However, again, in those states, the governors, the Democratic governors, have been the stopgap between extremely awful laws and state-sponsored violence, by the way, and their veto power has stopped those things. However, those governors are under attack. And we have gained in many of these states seats in the House and the state houses and Senate, but we're not quite at the point in many of those states that we flipped them, because it takes several cycles to flip them back, right? So this is why this is such a pivotal moment, why the 2022 election is more important right now than anything else. And I know we say this all the time, but it keeps getting more so because things get worse and worse. Because if we do not have elections that keep those governors in place and, to the extent possible, elect state Senate and House in the states themselves that will pass, you know, decent laws and oversee elections, and we don't have elections officials that are actually elections officials, we are in deep trouble. So we need to win in those states. So anybody that out there that's got money, there are many groups on the ground working to make sure that we win the governorships and the state houses in those states. And they've been working their asses off, excuse my language, for a very long time. And we need to support them because this is the tipping point. Without those safeguards and those electoral college, you know, the gubernatorial candidate in Pennsylvania, the GOP gubernatorial candidate, has basically said he will not certify any Democrat, no matter what.
Jody, sorry to cut you off. We have a minute left, and we're going to have you back. Media coverage, especially with this Pennsylvania governor's race. I heard a local reporter talk about how they look so different and dress so different. He never mentioned issues. So can you talk about the media's role from here until November? Because abortion is going to be a top issue in so many of these races, and you've got about a minute.
Basically, the media has been pathetic. It's been pathetic about abortion rights all along, and it remains pathetic about politics. So I highly recommend people search out true journalism from alternate publications, because unfortunately, the publications I grew up with and depended on for good journalism, the New York Times, the Washington Post, have simply become ineffective at real reporting. That's all I can say.
What will it take to improve that reporting with so much at stake?
It takes people complaining and arguing and, you know, taking away their subscriptions, and which I hate to say, because there's this catch-22 of we need to support journalism. On the other hand, we need to hold, you know, journalistic institutions accountable. But we must support independent journalism, because right now, that too is the most critical tool we have.
Jody Jacobson is a longtime writer and editor focusing on reproductive justice. As always, thank you for your work, Jody, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rose.
Thank you. Thank you for your phone calls and emails, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.